Oh, don't you just want to wiggle a little bit? That's Tito Puente with Dave Brubeck's Take Five. It's from Puente's 1985 album, Tito Puente and His Latin Ensemble. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And you know what day it is. It's Friday, but not any regular Friday. It's our Free Your Mind Friday. That's when this gathering place as we've created on air becomes our open forum, and you can say what's on your mind. The number to call is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And what we're looking for, especially when it comes to Free Your Mind Friday, is if we're looking for you to state your case, make your case, because other people may come after you, not in a really bad way, but they may want to augment what you say. They may want to refer to what you say in making their own arguments. They may even want to differ with what you say. All right, so those dems the rules, as they say in Brooklyn. 888-874-4888. It's Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. E from Edgewater, you're starting us off today.
Hello, Eutrice.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm so sorry to hear about your accident that you had. It made me feel very bad. But I hope you're feeling better.
Pulling through.
I'm so concerned because without you, we're like out there in the middle of nowhere. You know, we need you to guide us along. You know, I mean, I don't know about that.
I think we could all survive. But thanks for expressing your kindness. I'm pulling through. I have just one more surgery to go. I had surgery Tuesday, and that is still being felt.
You mentioned at the end of the show that you were going to get a checkup to see how the bone was mending, and then we didn't hear anything about what happened. So I was concerned.
Well, thank you so much. I'm pulling through. One more to go, and that's April 3rd or 4th, one of the two, and then we're done with all these fractured bones. In the meantime,
okay, sure.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm not fair. I just want all of the listeners, I love you all, and I want us all to concentrate on sending the white light of hope and love to you so you mend well, because, like I said, we need you a lot.
Thank you. Well, it's working. It's working. I'm feeling a lot better. The pain is, you know, an issue, but...
Was it a power walk, you get what you get, and you got to keep going.
That's all. Just keep moving. That's the answer to life. Just keep moving.
Yeah, I have to commend you in the face of the devil. You're unstoppable. You just won't let him get the better of you. You just keep on resisting, and that's what we all have to do.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much.
So, nothing today from the other part of the cortex? This is an amazing call.
All right.
That has some great information in there. In fact, a lot of Davids that call in, they have a lot of great information.
Yes.
The David from Brooklyn that wrote the book and the pilot, trains the pilots,
yes.
He should be like David A. from Brooklyn, because there's another David from Brooklyn also. He could be David B. I don't want to make the rules, but it's just less confusing because there's a lot of Davids and they're all got good things.
Yes,
to say.
I noticed that. We have a couple of Davids who call in and they all, they say some interesting things that you have to pay attention to. So
right.
Are you taking us on a political tour yourself today, or you just called in just to express?
Well, I just wanted to say those few things first. Well, I just wanted to know, was it a power walk you was on or just a leisurely stroll?
No, I was kind of half and half. I was walking, my regular walking, and, you know, at the time I fell, I had just kind of slowed down a little bit to catch up my breath for round two.
and you hit a bad spot on the sidewalk. Yeah, I've fallen like that, and I've been hurt. I was out for like a month having to hop around and be on crutches just from spraining my ankle, but very difficult to get along. So if there's anything I could do to assist you, help you, you know, I think the your engineer has my number. Because I'm down here in Edgewater, and you said you're in Florida, so if you're close by, I wouldn't mind coming to help you.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate your kind thoughts today, and I believe sincerely that all the good wishes that I've gotten, I mean, they help you. You know, they help me along. So I thank everybody for such very, very concerned wishes. I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. And we'll move on to Jay from New York.
Yes, Shoutrees. How are you feeling, my good sister?
I'm hanging in. I'm going through it and dealing with it.
Well,
so what's on your mind today?
Two things. Number one, I'm just at the point to where as we must, as so-called voters, just give up on the Democratic Party. It's a waste of time. I mean, they have no vision. They have no foresight. They have nothing. You know what I mean? The only thing that they have for people of color is to get your vote. Other than that, they have no plan to assist you. They have no plan to fight back. They have no plan to motivate you. They have no plan to recruit you. They have no plan whatsoever for you, other than for you to come out every 2 years and vote, or every 4 years and vote, or just come out and vote. You know, the party is basically manipulated and controlled by the wealthy. And it seems like, you know, at least you have to give credit to the Republicans for doing the do. They don't.
Okay, so you're clear about the you're clear that the Democratic Party is no longer useful. Then what is the alternative in your view?
The alternative is one that I don't think the American public is really willing to do, and I don't think, honestly, people of color are really willing to do. That's to set up a more or less independent party to deal within local municipalities, and then from there to branch out into national. But
all right. Well, let me ask you and challenge you on this point. The Democratic Party, you say, is no longer useful. A better alternative would be to go with an independent movement or party. But here's the thing. It takes time. What do people do in the meantime while, let's say, another party is formed, because they have to go through a formation process? Everything takes time. So in the meantime, the downtime that the voter will have with no political avenue, as it were, what do you think could work in the meantime? What are they going to do?
I would think the thing to work in the meantime is to build a base to deal with propaganda. I think to build a base of getting collective ideas to move forward once your party is put into place, to be in a position to contradict what is being said once you are attacked, because you've separated yourself from these parties. That's the only thing. And to suffer the consequences of your removal from these parties, because there's always going to be a form of suffrage. And it seems like, you know, we are in a position now to where suffering is coming even while being part of these parties. I mean, look at what the Republicans are trying to do with the so-called Affordable Health Care Act, Obamacare, whatever one they want to define it as. I mean, it seems like just from the basic information that I'm getting, the only people that's going to benefit from this is rich people. And they don't need the benefit. They don't have any problems.
But, you know, that's been, that's insurance. Always been the case with this particular health care issue. It has always been the case, even when in formation, even from the beginning, under the auspices of Hillary Clinton, that secret group that she called together as a de facto member of her husband's cabinet, and cooked up this idea of, well, look, this could pass, and then they handed it over to Barack Obama to get through Congress. So this bill has been flawed in so many ways from the beginning. I want to come back, though, to your proposition. If your proposition had been, let's say, implemented, you have people deciding, look, this is just not going to work for me. I'm out. Where would you put those people now? We're looking at midterm elections next year in 2018, and after that, we have another cycle of presidential elections. So in the meantime, what's happening to these people who, let's say, like you, or follow the thinking that you're talking about today, are in all of this, they are in a kind of limbo. They're nowhere in terms of having a grounding in a political party, a political instrument, if you will, that could represent their interests.
Well, you would be putting those people in a position to maybe go into local office, to sway local office elections. And then from there you build. To be honest with you, it would be
If they go into local office, local elections, what's the mechanism? You have to have some kind of party affiliation.
Yeah, but your party affiliation would be you setting up your party, your organization, and then working with those that you agree with, swinging your vote towards them, making sure that they're accountable, and then in the process, placing yourself out there in the open so that people could see and understand the things that you're trying to say. And then the following election, you would run candidates. And the following election, it's a process, to be honest with you, Utrecht. In order to challenge the Democratic and the Republican Party, it will take close to 32 to 40 years to be successful.
40 years.
It would honestly take that long for it to be successful. It would take. In order to have real success, it would probably take close to 12 years. And then from that point on, it would take a period of time of just building and building. And hopefully during that time, you would be able to make allegiance with some of the righteous people that are in those parties, maybe the Democrat or the Republican Party. And hopefully in a wide range, at some point in time when you have that moment of strength and ideas, just like you had people who have left the Democratic Party for the Republican Party when you had Reagan and vice versa, when you had Clinton and things of that nature. That would probably be the only way you will ever have any type of change to this system in regards to the Democratic and Republican Party. It would take close
All
to
right.
30 to 40
well,
years.
Well, you put your thoughts out there. Let's see what people think of it. At some
Have
point,
day,
I'm sure somebody's going to pick up from where you're leaving off now. Thanks, Jay, for your call today. Julie from New York, and by the way, the number is 888-874-4888. Julie, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
And hello to the community.
Thank you.
I have a comment in response to last Friday when we were discussing HBCUs. And
yes.
I believe it was Henry, I believe, from Chicago, who said he was not aware if the United Negro College Fund was still in existence or whatever. And I just wanted to say to him and to the other listeners that there is in Charlotte this very weekend a mayor's mask ball for the United Negro College Fund. It's being one of the sponsors is my home church there, and my sister's very excited about it. So I just wanted to let him and others know that they are still very engaged in raising funds for historically black colleges and universities. And while we're on the topic, I'd like also to call attention to the fact that in North Carolina, there's the North Carolina Mutual, which was the first black-owned insurance company, founded in 1898. Shaw University in Raleigh was founded in 1865, and there's Mechanics and Farmers Bank that was organized in 1907, and they're all still functioning. And sometimes we forget the support that's needed, and the name even, Mechanics and Farmers Bank. You know, it wasn't lawyers and doctors. It was mechanics and farmers. And these are the people that invested in the universities, and they're still there, so they need our support. And sometimes we overlook that. So I just wanted to submit that today.
Well, thank you very much. And, of course, in New York, you have Carver Federal Savings and Loan, which is a very venerable bank. In fact, many years ago, when I did a story about banking in New York, when redlining was at its peak, Carver Federal Savings and Loan was number one in the state of New York for reinvesting in the community. They beat out all other banks in terms of reinvesting money back into the community. Thank you, Julie, for your update. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
All righty. We have David from New Jersey. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, your chief. It's been a long time.
Oh, well, good afternoon to you. Thank you, David, for calling in. What's on your mind today?
I don't know if you're going to remember this, but way back in the, I think that was the late 80s, when, what is her name? Oh, her name escapes me, but Sonny Carson, and I can't remember his partner's name in that particular group. But they had a day of outrage, and we marched across the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yes.
Do you recall that? And you had actually sat down because you were exhausted. And I said, come on, mommy, we can do it. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that memory back to you.
But we were on the job. We were still on the job. We're protesting, but you got to take a little rest every now and then.
Well, you said to me, you're younger than me. You keep it moving because I got to take mama's rest. So, I never forgot that. But anyway, I have to say to you that my best friend has said to me for years, he says, I do not understand for the life of me how a group of people can all vote for one party and then expect that they're going to ask that same group to give them something. And I just could not hear him, and I tuned him out. And it wasn't until I heard someone else present it another way. And the way in which it was presented was, if 90% of us give our vote to one party, they already baked that into the cake. They don't have to give us anything because they know we're always going to give them that 90%. But if 10, 20, 25% of us were to leave that party, and just in the primaries only in the primaries. So as an example for people who don't understand, in the last election during the Republican primaries, if 25% of us would have gone to the Republican side and basically voted in their primary and voted for, let's say, Rand Paul, which the majority of them didn't want, and we would have shoved Rand Paul down their throat, and then Rand Paul would have gone up against either Hillary or Bernie, and then in the general election, you go back to voting Democratic. And that's how you're able to make a change, because then both parties are going to vie for you, because if the Republicans were to get 20 or 25% of us, they want to keep us. And by the same token, if the Democrats lose 20 or 25% of us, they want to fight for us back. And that's how we play the game. We're not playing the game right now, and we need to strategize and get in the game. So what I did was last February, I changed my affiliation, and I have to tell you, I never felt so powerful. The problem was we didn't get a chance to use our strength because by the time it got to New York, Trump was already chosen. But imagine if across the country we had done that. And in those primaries where he was running number one, we could have made him number two, number three, number four, number five, or number six. We could have changed the outcome of the election. So just
but
because
I noticed you didn't include in your game plan the possibility of just not just switching to the Republicans, but you have other smaller parties. You have independent parties. You had the Green Party. You had other parties that were available. Why didn't those parties pop up in your scenario?
Because ultimately, it's about playing with power. And the Green Party doesn't have the strength or the power right now. And so I don't want to waste my power. I want to use it in the most effective way possible. And for me right now, look at what's happening with what the Republicans are doing. You know, and you can back me up on this, Dutrice. In 2010, the Tea Party took over the Republican Party with 2 million votes. 2 million votes. We could have taken over the Republican Party with 3 million votes.
But here's the question. The Tea Party was already as close to the Republican Party ideologically. So that was not going to be a problem. When people like you and me and others with a clearly different ideology make an attempt to invade a party, you know that that's going to meet with some very stiff resistance.
But guess what?
What?
They're not going to know. It's not like I'm going to any of their functions to tell
They're
them what I'm getting
know.
Ready to do. I'm just going to the ballot box and making my vote known. And once they see the difference, it's like, oh, my God. Nothing they can do about it. They can't make me vote differently. I can do whatever I want to do in the ballot box. That's the power of it.
Will you not be spending your own power insofar as you know going in? Your vote more than likely will not necessarily count.
Sure,
because you're
kind
of canceling yourself.
No, on the contrary, because if 2 million Tea Partiers can take over the Republican Party and let the tail wag the dog, 3 million people in our group can take over that same party and wag the dog.
Okay.
And then that makes the Democrats fight for us and it makes the Republicans fight for us. Right now, the Democrats aren't going to fight for us. Hillary didn't pay us any attention. Basically, what she did was she had people of color surrounding her. But that's all they're doing is surrounding her. Where's the power going? To her brother who sits on the board on the Haiti mine as gold is being extracted? Come on. Let's stop playing games here. Let's get real. So for me, I want to see change. And the only way we're going to see change is we got to get in the game.
Believe get in the game.
I am no Republican at all. But it doesn't mean I can't be a disruptor.
I get where you are with the game part. I'm trying to figure out, in the end, when do your interests begin to be served?
Okay, I'll give an example. So if we would have shoved Rand Paul down their throat, which clearly they didn't want, and we could have made him their candidate with the amount of people that we have voting in our community, if all of us were to vote, basically Rand Paul would have gone up against either Hillary or Bernie. My preference was for Bernie. And in the general election, I would have voted for Bernie. So I would have got what I wanted anyway. I would have shoved it down their throat. They wouldn't have won, and I would have gotten the candidate that I wanted. And if I had to go with Hillary, at least I would have voted for her. As much as I can't stand her, it would have been a Supreme Court pick. My reason for voting for her. That's
all right.
It.
Well, you laid it out. Let's see how people react to the game plan. And,
I can't wait to hear it.
But good to hear from you, and thanks so much for contributing today. So let's go to Patricia from New York.
A good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you.
I'm happy to hear that you continue on the mend.
That's it. You just got to keep moving. That's the secret to everything.
I'm
just
telling you. So in any event, what I would like to do is take a page out of the Working Families Party and create a party with the umbrella for people of color, because it's important, I think, that we recognize. Someone, a caller a couple of weeks ago, talked about what is the mission. And the mission for both Republicans and Democrats is the acquisition and consolidation of power and money. And so we're not being well served as we attest to the fact that the Democratic Party has not served us well. So we need a party that represents the interests of people of color. And, you know, the Working Party, no one ever thought that the Working Party would have ever gained ballot status. And so we need to fashion a political party for people of color, and that's where I would go. I think the difficulty, however, in doing that is that these different groups, African Americans, Hispanics, and if we take the page out of what happened in Chicago with this past election between Chewy and Rahm Emanuel, unfortunately, those groups that we would consider under the umbrella of people of color, they might not necessarily want to align themselves and come into that tent, but that's where our strength would lie. All the groups that we consider groups of color come into the tent and become a viable option to all of these parties.
Why are you distinguishing people of color, groups of color?
Because we are at the bottom. No one is even considering us anymore. We get absolutely no attention in terms of what our issues are, whether it's healthcare, whether it's education, whether it's housing. Nobody considers us at all because we're so rooted in the Democratic Party. So we need to come out of it as a
but
block.
But you do have progressive organizations. You have the Green Party, which also says it recognizes the needs of people of color. You have the Socialist Party. You have many other parties that are saying already, look, under our umbrella, there is much, much room for people of color.
Yeah.
But you don't sound like you're convinced about that.
No, I'm actually not. And I think the proof was what happened in this past election. They were just not visible enough and certainly did not have any traction. So, no, I'm not going there.
Do you think with an appeal to communities of color that you can overcome the automatic reaction, which is, and you have to be prepared, even within the progressive world, people would say you're playing the race card?
Yeah, I guess what I am, because that's exactly what they're doing. They're playing the race card.
How so?
Well, when you look at, say, for instance, especially here in New York, there is absolutely no policy that is dedicated to addressing any of the issues that are significant and important to us. Certainly not housing, certainly not education, certainly not healthcare. So they are playing the race card while at the same time they're giving a lot of lip service to our communities.
Okay, so let's take us along the formation of this new group and how it would function with respect to, in the nasty world of politics, with respect to other parties competing in the same pool.
You know, Utrice, it would require a lot of education. It would require, we would not certainly not have to rebuff any policies from the Republican Party. The barrier would come from the Democratic Party and these progressive organizations, and it would require a lot of education as to, number one, where we are, where have they not been, and why we are in the condition that we are in. It would certainly require a lot of education, but I think the time is right to begin to do that.
Is the time right for confronting those systems that they may not be doing well at all, but they at least have a framework of workability, if you will. They have, you know, they're dealing with ballot access. They have fundraising mechanisms. There are things that they've begun to do. Let's take a look at the Democratic Party right now, which, of course, we know we have problems with. But would, for the sake of pragmatism, would you consider looking at a party that is probably not perfect at all and needs a lot of work? Are you prepared to enter into some kind of coalition effort with such a party?
I'm going to answer it this way, and I'm going to answer it from a very personal view. I belong to a professional organization of women. During my work years, the type of work, I'm a midwife, so most midwives in this country are women, right? And I belong to an organization that says that it promotes the health care of women, infants, children, and families. And I can tell you that right now, within my organization that supposedly supports women, there is an absolute fight within our organized organization right now around this issue. So I'm at the point now where I recognize, you know, white people are rational about everything except race and anything that surrounds race. So I don't want to fight with them anymore. I'm done. I want to create our own, advocate for our own, and do for our own.
Okay. Well, that's clear, and it's probably a very good tack to take. I mean, it's as justifiable as any other approach, I think.
I think so, too.
Okay. Thanks, Patricia, for your call. Keep us posted on how things are going.
I sure will.
All righty. Okay. From Brooklyn, it's the other David. We have about five Davids who call.
I have quite a few things to say. First of all, I want to talk about a possibility of us stop talking when we describe where we live here in the United States as a democracy. I think it's more accurate to call it a plutocracy or oligarchy. And because propaganda is very important, so when you call something democracy, and I looked at the computer recently, I saw 17 dictionaries, and what we have here does not recognize anything I saw in those 17 dictionaries as democracy. We're closer to a plutocracy, or certainly oligarchy at the very top. So that's one thing. Now, your question about what one would do if the capitalist parties of the Republicans and Democrats were abandoned, where would you go? I would say that's an important question. And we could start by, number one, at the local level, rather than letting it slide as it did before with the Freedom Party, which is basically a black-led party and was trying for ballot status in New York, we should have gone to the woodshed with the powers that be and gotten that party on the ballot. And there's no access for that party, even though, from what I understand, there were enough votes to get that party on the ballot. I don't think that party should stay just for one, quote-unquote, race or ethnicity or so forth. But if it got on the ballot as a regular party, it should bring everybody in, all people, no matter what their color is. And so that's a local fight that was never taken anywhere when that happened. Also, in the black community, why is it a brilliant lawyer like Alton Maddox can be kept off out of the courtroom, and in the black community, there's nothing done to overturn that? We should go to the woodshed with the powers that be to get him back in the courtroom where he belongs. And that's another local issue that people should be taking on. And I think it's very important to do local things, as I've mentioned before, including that which has not been mentioned. And all these years, he's been out of the courtroom, and that's a tragedy. The next thing I have in mind has to do with the idea that some people have that you can reform the Republican and Democrat Party. These are two ruling class oligarchy controlled parties that select the candidates and let you think you're doing something by pulling a lever and voting for them. We got to break loose of those parties totally. There's no future. This is like trying to go into a lion's cage and get those lions to be vegans. You know, that's not going to work. You know, you're not going to turn a lion into a vegan. And that's what you're doing if you're taking your energy and worrying about the Democrats and Republicans or whatever they are. And black people at one time were Republicans. So, you know, this is ridiculous. You're not going to reform this society that's based on capitalism, imperialism, and control of two parties and suppressing everyone else, keeping people from having valid access and reform them. You can't do it. You got to do something different. So I think that that's important for people to get that in their heads, that they have to do something different, no matter what color they are. So that's basically what I have in mind. And I think it's very important to people to consider this. And the people that learn the game, learn how to play the game, and do what's necessary to change things. The point is, some people mention what I did with the pilots and whatnot, and learn to play the game. But the point is, I learned to help other people to get through this system. But I really did not change the whole system. The point is, you have to know what's going on and to survive in a system and make the big changes when you're able to do it.
But of course, you will have to, you're correct, you have to understand the system. So in order to know how to function within it, how
exactly
it is likely to behave. All these things are very, very necessary.
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, I was with one of my pilots yesterday. He took me to an engagement I had to go to, and we talked about when I had them in college. And they had this deluge of my black students going to this quote-unquote white college. They didn't know what hit them. They never saw so many bright black students in life. And none of those students that were mine ever were arrested when they were in college. It's a remarkable thing because that did not happen. They went through, they knew the game. And had the training they got from me, and they negotiated that system between all those races that they had to deal with in Alabama, which was a remarkable thing. So playing the game is important, knowing how the game works, knowing how to negotiate the system and get through things when you're in that minefield. That the game involves those who control it, sets you in front of you where you have to go over it, under it, or around it. So you have to understand what is going on to survive.
Thank you for your call today and for a chuckle with the vegan lions. 888-874-4888. I understand, Julie, you have an addition to your previous call.
Yes, I do. It's a quote by W.E.B. Du Bois that relates to what we're discussing today. And he says, "May God write us down as asses if ever again we are found putting our trust in either the Republican or the Democratic parties."
Hmm.
So,
okay.
Yes. All right. So I'll leave it there and call next week. Thank you.
Thank you. This issue is very important. I mean, we've been talking about it for quite some time, the need to look outside of this binary system that we have. You either go Democrat or you go Republican, when both and neither really would seem to be adequate in terms of addressing our unique issue. And that, in a sense, that's what it was. I got a call about it on International Women's Day. And I made up my mind a long time ago, I'm not going to support any system. I don't feel that I need to. Any system or endeavor that refuses to recognize this issue of race oppression. And, you know, there was a picture taken of the White House. This is supposed to be Melania Trump's first social engagement as first lady. And some kind of ladies' luncheon at the White House. I made a strong endeavor to get pictures of the room. It was the white luncheon. I look at marches held all over the country and all over the world, actually, to stress this point about the value of women. And in the United States, the marches overwhelmingly were of white women. And it is the same fight that started the suffrage movement. One of the greatest feminists that this country ever had was Frederick Douglass, a black man, who saw the parallel between slavery and the denial of the right to vote to women. There was a great parallel there. And, of course, that was a strong political point, he thought. And he went all over the country talking about this. And they welcomed him. He went overseas, Britain and other parts of Europe. But when the time came for the women's movement to get behind the, well, I hate to call it the civil rights movement of the day, because the civil rights struggles began in the 1800s, or the 1600s, if you will. They weren't there. And even now, they do not see the centrality of race, as Jeffrey Perry would call it. Jeffrey Perry, who single-handedly has restored the works of Theodore Allen and Hubert Harrison and others. These are radical thinkers. One white, Theodore Allen, with the invention of the white race, who tells us definitively the point in U.S. history where this whole concept, this notion of whiteness, entered as a political ideology. There were no white people when whites arrived in the United States. There were no white people here. Not in 1619. There were Dutch people and German people and so forth. There were no white people. There was this introduction of whiteness at a particular time in our history. So I see the permeation of that kind of ideology within the women's movement, and they have not dealt with it. The labor movement, same thing. We just heard from Patricia. In a professional organization, the centrality of race manages to escape them. They're not willing to talk about this at all. So I recognize, you know, it's nice that there's International Women's Day, but I still see that they're not interested in doing the work. of confronting head on in the labor union movement, confronting racism head on. And that exactly was the point when these organizations were formed. The contradictions are still there, and they continue to ignore them. Which means, like the Democratic Party and even the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, more so than the Republicans, the Democratic Party was a party of the slavocracy. Talk about a need to confront head on this issue of race. But it is now subsumed, it's now implicit. They talk about race as a kind of implied problem. And they call it other things. But perhaps this is why Patricia and David and others are talking about the formation of political movements specifically structured around this question, since it's been ignored for so long. This is where we are. This is a major point, a big dilemma. So we should begin to talk about the conjoining of these issues, race and power. There's no point in being, you know, polite about it and suggesting about it and indirect about it. It needs to come together. Because people of color, communities of color, consistently have joined the fight for justice and equality and all the other good things that they say would happen when you exercise the right to vote. It's not happening, and it really hasn't happened. The people who have used it and abused it, like Jesse Jackson, and of late, like Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, to keep political power constant by exploiting communities of color for their political power. Is it time for these constituencies to amass their own power in their own interests? Now, we will get a torrent of reaction, people saying, well, you know, you're just encouraging racism. You're encouraging the racial bifurcation of the United States of America. Why can't we just have one movement? Well, that's been a topic for how many decades now? When is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? And all this time that people have been making the investment, supporting Party A, supporting Party B, I talked about it with regard to the Green Party. You couldn't find a more workable, broad-based solution than the Green Party, at least theoretically, for galvanizing all of these interests in one place. Whites who believe in justice, truly believe in justice. Blacks, Latinos, Asians, and so forth. But we see that thread. They are absolutely unwilling to remove that faulty thread, to even confront it. So we get our interests once again subsumed and diverted from the things that the party rulers, invariably white, decide, well, it is our number one thing is the environment. Well, you're saying your survival is number one, and police killings number one, and ridiculous rates of unemployment might be number one. We say it's the environment, so you're going to have to go along with us. There's no parity between the two. One has to take top billing, and it's not going to be racial justice. These are going to be very difficult things to confront and overcome. Yet that's what has to be done. We have to take a look here at, in so many ways, burgeoning movements that could have had the potential of causing within the political arena this kind of change that is so necessary, so long overdue, but they don't want to do it. We get the big picture. There's a crowd of millions and millions of people. But the issue that is screaming for attention, that has been put on the back burner for so many decades, in fact, centuries, still will not be allowed to dominate. When I say dominate, I mean to occupy a position of some kind of special attention. The thinking, of course, is racism is a black person's problem. And yet the evidence is so clear that the entire society pays a heavy price for racism. And so we have a lot of education to do. We have a lot of education to get people to understand really what the society is about. And these tactics, a pragmatic approach, some people have a different kind of approach. Some people say, well, let's blend, let's coalesce, let's come together, let's form something of our own. Whatever it is you're thinking, you have to deal with the fact that the system is constructed in such a way as to constantly frustrate your efforts at doing the right thing by millions of people who have been marginalized for so long. So this is our work. This is the work we have to do. We have to discuss it out in the open and look at ways in which we can help society come to terms with its own contradictions and hopefully make things better, make things work. Thanks so much for joining me today and for contributing, always at a high level. I so relish that, and I look upon it with a sense of pride that is a consistent signature of the program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. It's the weekend. Have yourselves a great, great one, surrounded by people who bring positive dimension to your life. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.